They're an important ally, but I want to find out what happened. Where is the fault? And we will probably know that by the end of the week. But Mike Pompeo's coming back. We're going to have a long talk.
I'm not sure I want to know much more about what happened.
Oh, it's going to come out. And it's already gruesome.
It's gruesome. Jordana and Paul here. Dan at the helm, thank you so much for spending some time with us. And I hope you're not eating a sandwich. If you're having a little nosh, maybe a little chocolate midday.
You mean a snack?
A little nosh.
A snack.
You just put it down, because we're now learning that Jamal Khashoggi may have had his fingers chopped off, may have been beaten, drugged, and eventually beheaded in the office of the consulate. And there might be audio of it. I would not listen to the audio. Is that something that...
No.
Okay.
No,
okay.
It's okay. Almost pornographic, right?
Okay.
I mean, it's...
Yeah, that's... I can't imagine. So some horrific details coming out. Still, of course, the question remains, if this is all at the hands of the Crown Prince and the King, what then is the American response? Here was a little bit of what President Trump said today on this disturbing and breaking story.
You look at Saudi Arabia, they're an ally and they're a tremendous purchaser of not only military equipment, but other things. When I went there, they committed to purchase $450 billion worth of things and $110 billion worth of military. Those are the biggest orders in the history of this country, probably the history of the world. I don't think there's ever been any order for $450 billion.
We don't know. We don't know what kind of orders there have been. Okay, so we don't know. No need to comment on that.
And the argument I'm hearing from some is that, but the oil, but. The money and the jobs, and I get that, and but other countries do it. So maybe we look the other way. They're an ally, one of our few allies in the Middle East, and there are bigger issues on the table, like Iran, containing Iran, combating terrorism. So, you know, do we... Yesterday we talked about shunning, not going to this Davos in the desert.
Instead of sanctioning.
Instead of actual hard sanctions. I don't know. The whole thing leaves me uneasy. We have to do something, right?
It leaves me uneasy, too. And, again, comes down to the question, Paul. I know we've gone there before. You know, are we putting money over morality? And some people say, well, this was just one life. It wasn't, you know, the poisoning of a whole people. It was, you know, this was just one person's life. And it's just so hard to quantify what one person's life is worth. I mean, $450 billion is a lot of money. Is that the price we're putting on a life now? Maybe it is.
And it's a slippery slope. Some people have said, well, he wasn't a U.S. citizen.
I feel conflicted about this. I got to be honest. It's not, especially after listening to Ken Edelman yesterday, at first I thought, oh, my goodness, this is horrible. If they murdered somebody, cut them off. But it's a great big world we live in, and a lot of people do a lot of wrong things. And if we stop doing any kind of business with governments that did some things that we didn't agree with, we wouldn't be doing business with anybody.
Would that be a bad thing? I guess it would be a bad thing. Right. No, we have to trade, and yes, a lot of jobs on the line. You know, actions have consequences. What should the consequences be for the Saudis?
That's right.
I mean, we can't encourage this kind of behavior.
And the horrificness of this crime, as we're learning more, which I'm regretting learning. I can't unhear or unread anything that I read today, but it's problematic.
And who would have thunk that maybe an Apple Watch
recorded the device? Oh, my goodness.
Which apparently they have not released this audio, but
I hope they don't.
Turkish officials claim that they have evidence, hard evidence, ostensibly gleaned from this Apple Watch, which was sending back live audio. So I don't know.
Oh, guys, some of your texts say this. This was an act of terrorism by the Saudis. Why would we want to further weaponize terrorists? This is the question I have not heard on the news that needs to be said. This was terrorism against a free press. Sad face. You know what? You're right. I cannot argue with that. You're right.
One of our listeners says, remember where the 9/11 terrorists
came from?
Yes, 15
of them came from Saudi Arabia.
We are a democracy, not a business. As a democracy, we must not look the other way in this matter, another listener writes.
I think it's awful what happened in Turkey, this texter writes. But what is the difference between us sending a drone to a foreign country to kill people that we don't like that guy that was a cleric in Yemen that was a U.S. citizen? It's I feel conflicted about this whole situation. I really do. I wouldn't want American companies to suffer. I don't want American people to suffer. Yet, again, we play fast and loose with our own morality sometimes, and we question.
We look the other way too much, right?
What is the price?
We make excuses.
That's a really good question. Your calls are coming in fast and furious, and I'm sorry we didn't even ask for them already, but we should. 651-989-9226. The details surrounding this story are horrific, and we want to give it the proper decorum when we share them with you. 651-989-9226. Bill's in Brooklyn Park. Hey, Bill. Thanks for calling in, sir.
Hey, guys. Basically, we know nothing for sure. We know nothing for sure. President Trump's handling it the best way at the moment. Let's get some more information. Let's find out really what happened. And nobody's asked this question. Why would they do this to him? I have no idea. Nobody's looking at that. So, I mean, really there's nothing there because nobody's even analyzing why would they do that.
Right. Well, Bill, he was a political dissident. Oh, I didn't mean to hang up on you, Bill. I just want to put you on hold there. He was a political dissident. He was speaking out against MBS and the Crown Prince.
And again, he was a contributor to the Washington Post.
Correct.
Right? And and he was poking at the Saudi regime.
Yes, he was critical. He was critical of the current regime. So that's why, and that's why people get killed when you know you're living in that kind of government. John's in Fairwater. Wow, where's Fairwater? Is that John? You're in Fairwater?
Clearwater.
Oh, Clearwater. Oh, Clearwater. I'm so sorry. I misread it. I'm sorry. Clearwater. Sorry, sir.
Hey, John. What do you think of this? Should there be sanctions against the Saudis, or we just don't know enough? What do you think?
I think the whole thing is comical. I mean, they're just they want to put larger tariffs at export and so on their oil, which is here nor there. They do it at will anyway. I guess what really bothers me is when you folks just made a statement that we really need to do business, we really need to keep up appearances, and it's like, why do we keep hearing about Trump's imposed tariffs on other countries with their exports, but we never hear anything about our imports going to them when we export and it goes to them? What those tariffs look like. Now, that'd be something for you folks in the reporting industry to get on top of.
Well, I think we're a little off topic there, John, but we appreciate the call. And I don't think you or I said that we need to be doing business with these countries.
No.
I think we're both very morally conflicted. And I don't have the answer to this one. I feel morally conflicted about this.
I'm keeping an open mind. It's horrifying. Mm-hmm. What should we do? What can we do?
Yeah, and originally I was of the mind, no, we should definitely sanction. And then Ken came on and said we should shun and not sanction because they need us more than we need them. They're not going to not buy our stuff. They're not, you know what I mean? They're not going to retaliate financially. So I feel like as I learn more about the situation, learn more about the economics of our relationship with them, but I hate to hear myself saying that because a man may have been murdered at the hands of the person we're doing business with. And I'm turning my own stomach when I say that.
The world, and we've said this before, the world is a dangerous neighborhood, right? I mean,
yeah.
And many regimes don't think twice about this. Most regimes don't have the rule of law, especially in the Middle East. I mean, it's...
Can't we sell the Saudis something other than weapons? As I'm often reminded by our callers that they were the 9/11 terrorists, can't we sell them something else?
Like what?
Corn? Soybeans? Steel? Can't we sell them something else? I don't really want them to give them weapons. But I don't want to sell them bone saws, not medical devices either. Hey, Doug's calling in. Let's sneak in this call. Hey, Doug, thanks for calling, sir.
Thank you. Well, the Iranians were our friend for a good part of this century, and we loved them, and we made them a vast army and supplied all their weapons until the Ayatollah kicked us out.
Mm-hmm.
Then we went with the Iraqis. We made them a big army under Saddam Hussein until we went to war with them, and now we're selling the... both those guys, we sold them weapons. They gave us the money. And then we did. We kept the weapons. Remember the thing? The Iranians were just. I mean, the people were knocking us for Obama giving the money back. It was their own money that we gave back. They bought planes, and then we did deliver the planes. Now we have planes. The F-35s we're supposed to give to the Saudis. Now, have we already collected the money for them so we can keep that too? Aren't we just prostituting ourselves?
Doug, all that money we're pouring into the Middle East, selling all these countries' weapons, what can possibly go wrong with that?
I don't know. It's prostituted on a big scale.
Doug, thanks for the call, sir. Appreciate it. Thanks for the guy. He makes a good point.
Yeah.
1 week we're friends. I mean, maybe not 1 week, but one generation we're friends, and the next generation we're enemies, depending on the regime that's in order.
I don't know. It's such a slippery slope.
Let's do.
We want to impose our values on these other countries, and I don't know. It just show me an instance where it's worked.
Well, I wouldn't say that, but I certainly don't want to take jobs or hurt businesses in the U.S. But I need to stop saying that because a man.
And
is
yet,
dead.
How do we stand up for our values and the sanctity of life? Full stop.
We're going to give Cynthia in Buffalo the last word, and then we'll hit the break. Hey, Cynthia.
Hey, thanks. Jornetta, I understand how you feel regarding having conflict. I do, too.
Yeah.
But one thing is certain. God saw it.
All right.
Don't think he didn't take notice.
See, we got to remember that. God's in charge. He's the only judge. I'm glad we ended with Cynthia. She's a wise woman.
Absolutely. Thank you, Cynthia. Woman.
We'll move on. We just want to, that's just the big story of the day, and it's clearly weighing heavily on us, so we wanted to get your thoughts on that. We're going to talk about the Me Too movement. Where does the First Amendment, the freedom of speech, fall in this era of Me Too? We've often heard that just if you make allegations, you could ruin somebody's life or you could damage a reputation. Well, are we allowed to make allegations then? We still live in a world, in a country, thank God, where we have free speech. So, Me Too versus the First Amendment. Join us for that conversation in the next half hour.
And then we're also talking Keith Ellison in the 4 o'clock hour. Mm-hmm. And 5 o'clock, amen. Weed is legal right now in Canada. Come on up, visit us, spend some money. Don't take it back with you, man. But it's legal now, just north of the border.
Are you Cheech or Chong?
It's
pretty good.
Whatever you want to be.
It's pretty good, yeah.
But what do you think about weed being legal for people over the age of 18 now in Canada? And is it inevitable at some point that here in the United States it will be legal? Regulate the crap out of it, tax the crap out of it. Should we get out ahead of that curve? We want to hear your opinions in the 5 o'clock hour. All that coming up next on CCO.
Me Too versus the First Amendment. Did you know that Ashley Judd is suing Harvey Weinstein, not for sexual harassment? A claim against him with sexual harassment had been rejected, but she is suing him for defamation because after she rebuffed him, he allegedly made negative comments about her to other producers, and then she's alleging that she didn't get roles. The Me Too movement is fraught. First Amendment issues. And we are actually going to talk with the lawyer who brought that defamation lawsuit and is here in town speaking at the Scylla Center about Me Too and the First Amendment. Lots of questions.
Lots of questions, and we want you to weigh in too. If you have some questions, let's listen to what he has to say. And then if you have specific questions about this, because I have questions, we all have questions.
We've been hearing this from you and among our friends. You know, what if you just make the claim that somebody, you know, what if you tell somebody that this person harassed me or this person assaulted me? Now, will that person not be hired for a job if somebody in that circle hears that? Maybe a hiring manager hears a rumor of something. Are there instances of that happening? And then where is the line for free speech? Because you can say it.
And how do you avoid a rush to judgment, right? I mean, how do you protect women coming forward who've been assaulted and encourage them to come forward, but still give men or women a right to defend themselves, right?
Absolutely. And I wonder if the era that we're living in will affect our First Amendment in the future.
Boy.
Think about
that.
These
are a lot of questions to jam into 10 minutes.
Well, that's why we're having Theodore Boutros on. We'll open the phone lines in a few minutes after he gets on, but we do have a lot of questions for him.
Yeah, we do.
Let's take a quick break. It's 3:30. The news is next on CCO. And we are now going to the Prep Sports Spotlight brought to you by Old Dutch Foods.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Paul and Jordana, happy Wednesday. Happy hump day.
We're getting there. We're getting there. We're almost over. You might be almost over if you go home at 5.
But that whole MEA weekend?
Whoa, the kids are excited. Yeah, the kids are over the hump. Yeah, they're on vacay.
Wow.
They're home with me for the next couple days. If you want to come over, that'd be great.
I don't remember that growing up.
Uh-huh. Yeah, because your wife did all the work, no offense.
No. I mean, when I was in school, I don't remember having...
It was called Teachers Convention out east. Teachers Convention weekend.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
All right.
That's why.
Oh, okay.
You and me both.
All right. Well, Me Too versus free speech.
Right.
I mean, it's been just, a little over a year since details came out about Harvey Weinstein and... Mm-hmm. And some of the very bad behavior. And that really started a social movement, not just here in the United States, but globally. Every
Absolutely.
Country now has their own Me Too movement.
Mm-hmm.
And more women, and it's not limited to women, mm-hmm. a lot of men coming forward as well.
Absolutely.
But it's bringing up some interesting ethical and legal quandaries
mm-hmm.
and how we apply the First Amendment, free speech, and yet... also protect people
mm-hmm.
who are charged, the whole innocent until proven guilty. So it's this fine balancing act, and we're still working through the details, it seems.
Our next guest is intimately involved with a fascinating lawsuit. He's representing Ashley Judd, and it's against Harvey Weinstein. Now, she was one on the forefront, possibly maybe the first person to come out against Harvey Weinstein and say that he was a sexual harasser. Well, she's also filed a defamation suit against him because of allegedly things that Harvey Weinstein said during a casting that cost her a big role. Joining us now is Theodore Teddy Boutros Jr. He's joining us. He's actually coming to speak at the Scylla Center, but he is the global co-chair of Gibson, Dunn and Crutcher's Litigation Group and from California?
Correct.
Teddy? Oh,
Los
Ted.
Angeles.
Ted.
But
okay.
You have a sister here, so there is a Minnesota connection.
Yes, and I grew up in North Dakota, so this was the big city for me to come to, so I'm glad to be back.
Welcome home.
Thank you.
So tell us a little bit about this lawsuit, and then we'll get into the larger Me Too versus First Amendment conversation.
The lawsuit really, Ashley wanted to take the next step and try to take this social movement and get legal change and try to get protections mm-hmm. for women and men who face harassment on the job and don't have a legal remedy. And so we brought this lawsuit in Los Angeles, and our theory is Ashley's going to give any recovery to the Time's Up Legal Defense Fund. We're going to give any of our legal mm-hmm. fees to Time's Up and other groups. So it was really a desire to take the Me Too movement to the next level and get some legal protection. So our lawsuit is we have a number of claims. One is defamation, because Harvey Weinstein, after Ashley Judd rebuffed his sexual advances in the Peninsula Hotel in 1997, retaliated against her, as we lay out in our complaint, when they were casting the Lord of the Rings trilogy, which became multi Academy Award winner,
right.
blockbuster,
sure.
huge, and
tons of money.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And Harvey Weinstein told Peter Jackson that not to cast Ashley Judd. She was a nightmare to work with. He had had a bad experience with her. Don't hire her. Peter Jackson did. You know, Harvey Weinstein was the most powerful guy in Hollywood. He believed him. Peter Jackson didn't know about the harassment and the retaliation until he saw the reports in the New York Times, the New Yorker, about a year ago. And then he spontaneously went on the record and said how bad he felt about this, that this now explained these comments by Harvey Weinstein. So we're bringing a defamation claim. We're bringing a sexual harassment claim under a California statute that's been really not applied much. So it's somewhat novel theory. But the mm-hmm. defamation claim is just straightforward. He trashed her career to retaliate her against her for not giving into his sexual advances. That's classic, and it really does show how sexual harassment can have the emotional effects, the physical effects, but also hurt a woman's career and change the trajectory of a woman's career in serious ways.
And Ted, is stating the obvious, this is one compelling reason, one more example of why more women don't come forward sooner. A lot of the arguments, you know, I remember the Judge Kavanaugh case. Well, it's, you know, many, many years ago. Why didn't Dr. Ford come forward right away, file a police complaint? Now, granted, she was a teenager, but women with jobs in many cases fear for their jobs. They fear for their careers. They're going to be labeled as a troublemaker if they come forward. Is there validity to that line of thought?
It really is a big issue. And I think that the, Ashley, in the New York Times story, for example, and in our complaint, we lay out, she's trapped in this hotel room with Harvey Weinstein, really the most powerful person in Hollywood. She wants to get out of there, but she knows he's got the keys to her career in his pocket. And so it's this dilemma, and it's one of the reasons why I think employers across the United States are doing even more to try to make clear that there's a safe way to come forward and bring out these claims. But that's the problem. And one of the reasons, it's not just a Hollywood problem. And that's why we're bringing this lawsuit for the broader reasons, to really, you know, punish and deter this kind of behavior.
One of the texters writes, won't Judd's attorney have to prove Jackson would have been hired 100%? Oh, I mean, Ashley would have been hired 100%. Is that impossible to prove?
Well, in the law is the preponderance of the evidence standard.
Okay.
So more likely than not.
Okay.
But we have very powerful evidence and a very strong argument and testimony that we'll put on. We're looking forward to trial. We got through the motion to dismiss, so we've got a trial probably in about a year where we think we'll be able to prove she had her choice of two roles in the films.
So let's move on to the broader Me Too movement. I mean, as an attorney, and we hear when we have these conversations on the radio, we like to have them a lot. Now you can ruin somebody's career with just an accusation. You can say they touched me or looked at me inappropriately or any kind of harassment, and you can ruin somebody's career. As a lawyer, as somebody now functioning in the circle of Time's Up and Me Too, are we seeing a lot of, A, accusations like that and consequences like that, and are you seeing false accusations?
There is the question of making sure the process is fair. One of the things the talk I'm giving tonight is called The First Amendment in Me Too. And if you look at the Me Too movement, in part, it's one of the most significant First Amendment free speech movements in our country's history. Mm-hmm. It's all about speech, coming forward, having this discussion, holding people to account. At the same time, the law does protect people from false accusations. That's what defamation law is. But when someone's a public figure in a position of power where they're on the stage of the public stage, then there are protections for them. But the First Amendment allows a broad swath of breathing space, as the Supreme Court has said, to allow for these important public issues to come out.
And yet, Ted, in the age of social media, it seems like we tend to remember the accusations. We maybe as a society don't remember the retractions. And even if it's a minority of cases, and I've seen Wikipedia, 2 to 10% of allegations turn out to be false, right? For whatever reason, revenge, whatever. How do we protect people while we're gathering the evidence? How do we protect people who may be wrongfully accused? How do we protect their careers, their reputations?
Well, it really is interesting. That's one of the things I'm going to talk about tonight, that we're in an age where with social media, you can correct things and you can get the real story, the true story on the record, if there is a false claim, so much more quickly. A private individual can tweet something that there's been a false allegation against them, and it can go viral if it's something that people are seeing. And news organizations and radio stations and magazines and websites can go in and, if a false statement is made, correct it. And I've seen it happen over and over again. Mm-hmm. That then does overtake an incorrect fact in this context and other contexts. So I do think that the process, we have more speech than ever, and the remedy for false speech is true speech. So I think the process, reporters and everyone needs to be careful and stick to the facts. But I do think the system can protect people and be fair, at the same time make sure that women and others who have been wronged can come forward and tell their stories.
We currently have restrictions on the First Amendment. And if you have a question for Ted, we just had so many questions. That's why we didn't open. No. Shoot us a text at 81807. You can ask a quick question. But we currently have restrictions on the First Amendment when it comes to things like hate speech and incitement to violence. Do you think post-Me Too and the legacy of it, will it change inherently the First Amendment at all?
If anything, I think we need even stronger First Amendment protections, particularly right now you see free speech being attacked by our president of the United States, who in some ways combines the Me Too and First Amendment issues all in one because he had accusers. I tracked the Me Too movement in part back to what happened during the campaign, and I'm going to talk about that tonight. But I think that the First Amendment protections we need to keep, we need to even strengthen them. At the same time, being fair to everyone, the legal system has the laws requires actual malice when you bring a defamation claim if you're a public figure, but if something is absolutely false, you can bring a defamation claim. And so I don't think there's any reason. President Trump has suggested we loosen the libel laws and make it easier to sue for libel and defamation. I don't think we should go that route. We need stronger First Amendment protections, but we need to make sure the system functions fairly.
For everybody involved.
For everybody.
For those wrongly accused and for women whose or anybody whose voices have been silenced.
Exactly. And one of the reasons, again, going back to Paul's point, the importance of having strong laws that if someone wants to come out, and especially we're talking about a powerful public figure, and say this person wronged me or attacked me or harassed me, they need to know they can say that and not be threatened with a lawsuit that will bankrupt them. Mm-hmm. That's what always happens. And you'll remember the Harvey Weinstein story about in The New Yorker by Ronan Farrow.
They're going to bury you under lawyers,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. And exactly. And they hired private investigators to go after and squelch these stories. Yep. So that's why we need strong First Amendment protections.
Can people still come and see your talk tonight?
Definitely. Please come.
It's open. Cal's Auditorium.
Free. Yes.
Yep. Cal's Auditorium, University of Minnesota. It's 7:30 to 9 tonight. Ted Boutros Jr. will be speaking there. Me Too and the First Amendment. So great to have you in studio.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks, Ted.
I enjoyed it.
Absolutely. Time now is a Wicks and Jewelers Time Check.
It is now 3:49, Jordana, with special event pricing, expanded collections, and 0% financing. Wicks and Jewelers Watch Fair is the best time to buy a watch.
Speaking of the First Amendment, Paul and Jordana, we're grateful for it. Steve Scalise, Republican Representative Steve Scalise of Louisiana, wrote an op-ed emphasizing the importance of free speech in America. Thankfully, he is doing well after he was shot. He writes in his piece, "Let me be clear. There is absolutely no place for violence or threats in our political discourse. We need a higher level of civility in our political debate, and it starts with us." The piece was published by Fox News, and he discredits attacking the opposition as a tactic of a dictatorship and a sign of an inability to defend one's own viewpoint. Powerful stuff. Go, Steve.
The latest with Keith Ellison. That's coming up next hour on CCO.